everyone is doing well. Please.
This meeting is now being recorded.
Proceed to the next slide. So our objectives today are to discuss the standardization and quality being an essential component of the care that we give during the perinatal period, both in pre-pregnancy, obstetrics, delivery, postpartum, and newborn care. We're going to review the basics of the model for improvement from the Institute for Healthcare Improvement and the three questions and what PDSA cycles or tests of change are. We're going to discuss specific examples of the PDSA cycle and look at some of the projects that we've done here in the last 7 years in OPQC that demonstrate how we've used this model for improvement in making changes across our state. And then we're going to describe, lastly, how our interdisciplinary team improves the quality of testing of a change by working together. Next slide. So it's important to know that change equals life. In fact, that is the one constant that we can say is true about life, and that is that it's always changing. But we can't always say that our changes that occur in our life are making things better or improving things. But when we think about change, particularly when we think about it in the bigger context of life, we think about any things that we do to bring about change. We want to make ourselves better, faster, stronger, cheaper, higher, stronger. But the bottom line is we always want to make change an improvement. Next slide. So as you can see, we can take a change like makeup and make things better, or maybe questionably better or not better by applying the same application. So that's true when we talk about change in general, that change can sometimes be an improvement, and sometimes it can be not an improvement. Next slide. So it's important to remember that quality improvement is the right way. The model we're going to talk about today has really been shown over and over again to be the right way to make change, especially in healthcare. We know that it's patient-focused. We know that it is team approach to care. It's proactive versus reactive, and that's really a critical point, probably one of the most important points. So much of what we do in healthcare is reacting. When someone becomes ill, we have a reaction to that illness to try to make things better. But when we talk about quality improvement, we really want to look at our system and say, this process doesn't work as well as we'd like it to. So we want to proactively change it so that when we are encountering someone with a particular problem, we're proactively have systems in place to get a better outcome than what we could if we just reacted to every single problem that we encounter every day. And the other thing is make sure that when we do QI, we're looking at efficiency and cost savings. And we think about the value equation, and that is quality, both the perceived quality, so patient satisfaction, and the technical quality, the outcome, the objective finding, times accessibility, so making sure everyone who needs a particular procedure or treatment can get it, over the cost, and really taking a look at that value equation and all the things that we do in healthcare. And that's really the way things are going. Next slide. So these are the partners that work with OPQC, and as you can see, these partners are all thinking about the value equation and helping us in OPQC to move in that direction towards always thinking about the value equation when we think about making improvements or making change within the healthcare system. Next slide. We recently talked about antenatal steroids on a previous webinar. This was a project that we did a couple of years ago. And what we can say is that we're actually being measured both on the national level, like with the Joint Commission and the IHI and the National Quality Forum, being measured on the national level as well as the Ohio level to look at how we're doing with this quality improvement. Are we actually providing the value? Are we delivering evidence-based practice? And one of them that we looked at is this Joint Commission measure called PCO3, which is the measure that asks, are we giving steroids to moms who deliver babies between 24 and 34 weeks? How well are we doing that? And we were looked at it by each hospital, the major hospitals in Ohio, the major centers that do deliveries. And we were able to show that we were doing that in about 90% of the cases, and we were able to provide consistent production of that. So that's just looking at some of the expectations that are coming to us from national and state level bodies. Next slide. So there's five fundamental principles of improvement. The first is knowing what you need to improve. So identifying where there could be a benefit in making a change. Have a way to get feedback so you know if you're improving. So in other words, knowing how to measure exactly what's happening in your system so when you make a change, you can tell that there's an improvement. We want to make sure that the change that we develop is effectively resulting in improvement. In other words, there are some efforts that we end up saying we didn't really actually help improve things, so we're going to stop doing it, or we're going to adapt it to a different process. And we'll talk a lot more about that when we talk about that early level of change with the PDSA cycles. And the thing we want to realize, and this is a critical thing that I think is really often foreign to healthcare providers, and that is we want to change things a little at a time and adapt our system as we need to so that our change actually clearly shows improvement. And we want to start a little and ramp it up. And then lastly, once we find that we have a system in place that's working well and we're getting the results we want, we figure out how to really solidify that change so that we don't slide back to the old way of doing things once we've stopped paying as close attention. So making sure that change is permanent. Next slide. And it's not always that we have to work harder and harder to make these things better. Sometimes it's just about making sure that the right thing happens for the right patients at the right time, every time. That's called reliability. And the way we can reach that is really by paying very close attention to any failures, really being preoccupied, trying to anticipate when a failure might happen in a system or in a healthcare setting, and really being preoccupied to not let that happen. Having the team do that. And we want to also kind of lay the level ground. So instead of having a manager who decides everything that will happen on a unit, we actually want everybody that participates in the care of that patient, including the patient, to have the ability to look at this change that we're making and make sure it's the best change. And at the same time, we want to make sure our senior medical and administrative leadership are backing us in making this change. In other words, I've seen it happen over and over again. If we don't have our senior leadership really being behind us, it's a lot harder to make those changes, and especially to make them stick. And then just really every day practicing this improvement science that we're going to talk about in our system. And we really need our senior leadership to guide us and to keep reinforcing that this is the way we want to make change. So that's a critical step in changing the culture of how we make change in the hospital system. Next slide. So in healthcare, it is true that variations in outcome between and within hospitals are real. In other words, some hospitals do better, and sometimes a specific unit does better, or a specific provider, or a specific provider group. They have learned things and do things better. And we can actually measure that variation. And if we take a systems approach, we can decrease this variation by other less well-performing units or hospitals adapting these measures that are already being in place that lead to good outcomes in other areas. And that's called standardization of care. And that means that every patient will get the same quality evidence-based care every single time when they need it. So, for instance, some of the projects that are going on and have gone around the country are things like antibiotic timing before surgery. And that's been shown to lead to an outcome of decreased infections in the postoperative period. So really standardizing that process, making sure the right antibiotic is given at the right time on every patient that needs it. Next slide. So Lewis Carroll was quoted as saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And that's important because really that sometimes with quality improvement, we don't know what road we need to take to get to that improvement. But as long as we have a good measure to show us that we're in the right direction, then we can test a bunch of different roads to see which one works the best for us. Next slide. So now we're going to talk about, this is kind of the crux of the whole lecture, and it's really around this IHI model that came from the Breakthrough Series from the Institute of Healthcare Improvement, and it's called the Model for Improvement. This was developed to help healthcare organizations make breakthrough improvements in quality while reducing costs. Remember that value equation. The vision behind this is that sound science exists on the basis of which the cost and outcomes of current healthcare practices can be greatly improved. But much of this science lies fallow and unused in daily work. So the model for improvement is based on three questions, and we'll go through each of these in detail. But it's meant to provide organizations structure to guide thinking, to ensure discipline and thoughtfulness when making the change, and to provide documentation for future improvements. It's easy to implement and works well in busy clinical settings. Next slide. So the first thing is, what are we trying to accomplish? And that is called our aim or goal. And we're going to talk about that first. So next slide. So again, what are we trying to accomplish? And that's our SMART aim. And you all have probably heard about SMART goals or SMART aims. They're very specific. They're measurable. They're actionable. They're relevant and they're time bound. And that's what SMART stands for. And it's really got to be written down and shared across your organization with your teams that work on these changes, with the administrators who are going to back these changes, and even with the patients who are going to be affected by these changes. And what we know is there's evidence that teams that make clear aim statements are much more successful. So now we're going to talk about a few examples. Next slide. So this is an example of an aim. By January 1st, 2016, we're going to reduce to 3% or less the number of women who are between 37 and 39 weeks gestation for whom delivery is scheduled in the absence of appropriate medical indications at the best ever hospital. So as you can tell with this aim, it's specific, There's a measurement that we can do. There's actionable items. It's very relevant. In fact, this is our first project in the OB section of OPQC. And it's time-bound. So we've set a time limit where we have to accomplish this. Another example is the second one, which is by June 30th, that's the time, we're going to improve birth registry accuracy, that's the action, so that progesterone administration will be documented accurately 95% of the times in the OB records in St. Excellent Hospital. And that's the measurement, it's specific and time-bound. So those are some examples of SMART aims. Next slide. Our second question, once we've come up with our SMART aim, is to clearly define what our measurements are. How will we know that a change is improvement? So we can do lots of measurement. We can do lots of data collection. In fact, sometimes that is a big barrier for our teams because they're very busy clinically. We give them too many things to measure. What we want to do is get to the core of what we're trying to improve. And we want to set up one or two or three measurements that will show that if we do make change, we're actually going to see that things are better. So we want to make it as clear and simple as possible. Next slide. So it's important, you've heard lots of people say, well, I think things are getting better. But that's only a suspicion. We really want to be able to shine the light on improvements or failures. We want to make sure that it's very clear that we're making an improvement. Being able to place a number on the amount of change you target, for instance, 95% birth registry data or 3% or fewer scheduled deliveries, these things are clearly important to show an amount of change in your target. Next slide. Having a way of getting feedback to let you know improvement is happening is critical in the measurement field. And it's really important that we give that feedback on a regular basis as we go through testing our changes. We don't want to say, okay, in 6 months we'll tell you what's going on, because that really doesn't motivate or give urgency to the change for the team. We want to create a sense of urgency. We want to display as frequently as we can when there's enough data that the change is happening or the change is not happening. We don't want our teams to spend 6 months doing something that's not improving anything. It's too much time. We want to give them a sense that, okay, tomorrow we're going to make a change, and we want to be able to say the next day that we can see that it's affecting things, or the next week. We don't want it to be 6 months from now. Next slide. So how will improvement be measured? For instance, sometimes it's great if we have a public reported system in which our system is already operating in, like the birth registry, where we can pull the data from that. And we've done a lot of work with our partners at the Ohio Department of Health to help us get these data source reports. The other place that's becoming more and more easy to access is our electronic medical record. It's a place where we can run a report on discrete variables and pull out information. Sometimes, like in Epic, you can build checklists, or you can build a doc flow sheet that actually can be queried on a group of patients and produce a report that'll give you that measurement. Sometimes we ask patients to give us feedback, like with patient satisfaction scores. We ask them to write us a score, and then we can look at those, we can collate those and see, is it improving? And then sometimes we get feedback from our departments, from other departments that we interact with, like if we're doing an initiative between OB and the ER, we might ask the ER to give us feedback. Is this change that we've made actually helping you do your job better? Next slide. So these are some examples of ways in which we've shown measurement. This is our first project that we did. It's the early elective delivery project where we looked at inductions, and then we used birth registry information from Vital Stats to show that over time, as our project moved forward and we spread it across Ohio, we were able to show that more and more of the pregnancies in Ohio resulted in a full-term delivery when there was no other indication for delivery before 39 weeks. And as you can see, it's a very nice example of frequent information. And this is broken down into quarterly information. When we actually did the project, we were getting monthly information about our rates, and each hospital that was participating was getting their own feedback from their own hospital system, plus looking at the aggregate data so they could make an assessment of how they're doing compared to other sites. And that's a great motivator. When you can see that you're doing really well, you want to keep doing really well. Or when you're seeing you may not be performing as well as some of your neighbors, you begin to try harder because you don't want to appear like you're not doing as good. Next slide. Here's another evidence of a project. These are called run charts, and these display our data. They give us our measurements so that we can see if we're making improvement better. And this is just showing that as our project progressed with the antenatal corticosteroids, we were able to demonstrate within birth registry that about 90% of our moms were getting antenatal corticosteroids when they delivered their baby before 34 weeks. And so it's a very nice example of how we could see that we were doing better and better at documenting that antenatal steroids were being given to moms. Next slide. Here's our most recent neonatal project that shows that when we were able to standardize a protocol for weaning in babies that were affected by neonatal abstinence syndrome, we could reduce the length of days that the baby had to spend in treatment and in the hospital, and we could get them back with their families more quickly. And so this is a nice example of another form of measurement that we did. And the other thing you can see on this is that you can see when key interventions happened on a larger scale, those boxed-in interventions were able to clearly show either that it impacted the length of stay by reducing it, which is our goal, or sustaining it, as the last one on the right showed, that after we put in this new treatment protocol, we saw a decrease and then it was sustained, which is a critical part of any quality change, is that we can show that a change is sustained. Next slide. This is just another example from the neonatal abstinence syndrome showing that as this was spread now to many, many hospitals throughout Ohio, we're beginning to possibly see that the average stay for treatment of neonatal abstinence syndrome may be decreasing, mainly because of us standardizing the treatment protocol. Next slide. So on to our third question. Our third question is, what change can we make that will result in an improvement? In other words, what ideas can our teams test to show that improvement is occurring? And that's where we get into this Plan, Do, Study, Act cycle, which is called the PDSA cycle. It's the testing phase of the project. Next slide. So, the ideas for change. How do we come up with ideas for change? Well, sometimes we come up with them because they're evidence-based, and we haven't applied those evidence-based practices to our system. So we need to implement those evidence-based practices, and we need to test whether it'll work in our system. And sometimes it's because somebody came up with a really good idea at a neighboring hospital, or you heard heard it on at a webinar or you were at a conference and you heard somebody say, you know, there's not really good evidence of what to do in this particular situation, but this is what we did, and this is what we can show you. The evidence is that this change we made actually resulted in improvement. And we call that in quality improvement stealing shamelessly. And that's a quality that we promote, actually, in quality improvement, is we want you to steal. It's not about protecting your evidence or your workflow. You really want to share it and steal it. And that's all fine. We really believe in that in quality improvement. Next slide. So the PDSA cycle. This is where we do all the testing of change. And we're going to talk now about what is a test, what is a test of change, and what's not a test of change. But just to go through this, the first step is to plan, define the objectives, ask what questions need to be asked, and make some predictions of what's going to happen. And there's some questions you need to answer before you do the actual test. You need to ask who's going to do it, what's going to be done, where's it going to be done, when's it going to be done. You also have to plan out who's going to collect the data and what data you're going to collect to answer those questions that you have in that you generated out of this idea of testing. The second step is to do the test. Carry out the planned test, collect the data, and then begin to analyze the data. Look at what happened. Then study is to complete the analysis of the data and compare the data to your prediction you made in the plan, and then summarize what was learned. What did the team learn from this test? And then the last thing is to act. And the act is really the next step to the next test of change, which is look at what happened and say, okay, this worked, so we're going to ramp it up. Or this didn't exactly work, so we're going to adapt it. We're going to change it some and then try it again on the same level. Or it works so well, we're going to adopt it and we're going to move forward and just keep going. Or the last thing would be to abandon. This test did not work. It actually resulted in something bad happening or it wasn't the right thing. We're going to abandon it and start over. And again, this is in an effort to get standardization. So in other words, we're working on trying to figure out how do we standardize to get the best outcome. So the next slide. So what is a test? We talked about that. We want to put a change into effect on a temporary basis, and this is critical. When we do a test, we're not saying let's change the policy for this. We know this is going to be better. We're actually saying we don't know if this is going to be better, so we're going to just change it temporarily and see what impact it has. And we can actually do that in healthcare safely. Next slide. So these are examples of things that are not tests, and when you're first starting out, it's hard sometimes to know if you're doing a test or not. But these are some clear examples. When you do data collection, that's not a test. Okay, if you are given a memo or a policy and told to implement it, that is not a test. If you do an educational program, that could be an intervention, but it's not a test. Getting a form policy or procedure approved by official committees, again, it's not a test. It's an old way to make change, but it's been shown not to work as well as the model for improvement has been shown. Next slide. So why do we test? Next slide. We test to reduce the risk. We test to reduce the cost of implementing an intervention. Testing provides us an opportunity to learn without severely impacting day-to-day practices. Secondly, we do it to increase or decrease our belief that change will result in an improvement. Sometimes we just think that this idea really is not good, but to be able to prove it to our team, we have to test it. Next. We also test to learn how to adapt the change to other conditions in our environment. So sometimes we know that something is working really well in general surgery, but we're not sure it's going to work as well in obstetrics. So we have to test it. Why make the change across the board when we don't even know if it'll work in obstetrics? We need to test it first. Next slide. Lastly, we do it to minimize staff resistance to implementation and get more staff buy-in. One of the things that makes change so difficult is that we're just not sure making a change is going to make things better, and we have to have some proof. So doing a test on a small scale and then disseminating the learnings can actually really help your staff buy into a change that you're trying to make. Next slide. So it's important to remember that the first thing we want to do is test on a very small scale. In fact, we often say we're just going to test for one day or one patient or one physician or one episode of an event. Just test it once and then analyze it in the PDSA way just to see what we can learn from it. Next slide. So this is an example of what we call a process map or a key driver diagram. And what this shows is on the left, you read it from left to right, we look at, first of all, what our SMART aim is. Then we develop a key driver diagram. And these are the things that we think, based on evidence or based on our experience, are the key drivers to get us from the beginning of our project to the end of our project in accomplishing our aim. And then on the far right are interventions. And these interventions are the things that we're going to test. These are the things that maybe somebody else has done or some ideas that experts have come up with that we think will focus in on these key drivers and get us to our SMART aim. And then always at the bottom, we want to make sure we have our measures clearly delineated and know where we're going to get that data from our measurements so that we can track if our change is actually happening in the right direction. Next slide. So I have a couple of slides that show these key driver diagrams with actual examples. And this is our current project with OPQC in the obstetric field. And you can see some of these interventions that we're testing. For instance, making sure that we have a practice protocol to selectively or universally screen cervical length. That's one of the things that we're doing to find women at risk for premature birth and give them progesterone. So once we have looked at some practice protocols, we want to test those out and see, are we actually able to apply them to our population? Do we have to adapt them? Or they just don't work at all. We need to abandon them and start over. And again, the measurements we would be doing would be to see, are we applying this protocol with a group of patients in a particular site? Are we following all the steps? And we could test each of those steps as a test of change and then ramp it up as we get secure that each of those steps is in the right order. Next slide. This is our neonatal abstinence syndrome project, and I talked about standardizing neonatal abstinence treatment protocols, and that's about halfway down the slide. And again, we try to make that, it's actually a bundle of processes that we try to make very simple, but that include all the critical elements. And then we look at, if we were to adopt that in our system, how would we go about it if it's very different than the way we do it currently? Next slide. So, again, PDSA, we're going to test an intervention in our system, hospital, or practice. We're going to keep the overall aim and key driver in mind when we design the test so that we're not testing something that doesn't actually focus us on our SMART aim. And we're going to steal shamelessly and test others successful interventions. Next slide. So we're going to go through each of the PDSA steps. The first is planning. That's the longest phase, and it's the most important. We want to describe what tests as it relates to the aim. How will we know the changes in improvement measurement? These are our three questions. And then lastly, what do we predict will happen? Do you think it's going to work? What do you think will happen? Next slide. We're going to list all the tasks that are necessary. So the process to complete the test. That's the what. We're going to name who is going to do the test. We're going to talk about when will it be done. We're going to talk about where will it be done. We're going to do data collection, who's going to be responsible, and what pieces of data do we need to collect to show that we're successful or a failure. The plan doesn't have to be real precise. You won't be able to know with certainty if a change works. Now, if the plan is not precise, you won't know if the change is going to work. So you have to make the plan very precise. It's very important to answer each of these questions. Next slide. The next step is to do the test, to actually test it. And remember, keep it small, build on success, ramp it up. Ask yourself, was the test carried out as planned? Sometimes we try to do a test and it doesn't work. We record the data and observations. Very important to remember what worked and what didn't. And then what do you observe that was not part of the plan? So sometimes variables come in that you didn't think of that are important to record because they may be important to affect whether the plan works or not. Next slide. So the third thing is to study the results. Did your results match your predictions? Compare the results of your test to previous tests that you've done. Did it make it better? Was it as good as you had predicted? Was it as bad as you predicted? And then what did you learn? And then lastly, next slide, we make an action. And again, adapt, abandon, or adopt. These are the three choices, and you should pick one of those and then follow up with the next test of change. And we often say it's good to design two or three or four tests of change so that you have your team continuously moving forward. Next slide. So you want to keep trying and keep learning. You want to have continuous cycles going. You want to continue to test until you find the solution and helps you reach your objective. If you don't get improvement, it's not a failure. It's actually a very important learning, and you adapt or abandon that test so that your next test will, again, see did you improve or not. Next slide. So the key points to PDSA, it's very important to not forget to analyze if your team really believes in this test. And looking for sources of resistance are critical. So the first test should always be as simple and as small a scale as possible. And that's where you're really going to see those failed cycles that are important to help your team hone in on what works and what doesn't work. Once you get to the implementation phase, which is where you believe that your process is working perfectly, you want to test it in all the different possible scenarios, different doctors, different shifts, different staff, on weekends, during the week. And think about really try to measure where the breakdowns occur so that you can get support to really break down what the naysayers are saying. And there's always a small group that will say, you know what, this is not better, this is not better. Next slide. So we're going to go through one of the examples from one of our teams that is currently working on the progesterone project to show how a series of test cycles are used to learn and then to ramp up. And we're greatly indebted to this team for for working together on this project. Next slide. So their first cycle was to identify women with a history of prior preterm birth when the woman called to set up her new OB appointment. So their plan was to teach the staff to ask about the OB history of a spontaneous preterm birth. The do was the schedulers asked all first appointments if they have a history for 1 week. The study showed that the schedulers forgot to ask 100% of the time. They averaged 10 new appointments scheduled each week, and none of the patients were asked, and there was nothing recorded about whether they had a spontaneous preterm birth. So they knew they needed to change their test to include a simple algorithm that the schedulers could see when the phone calls came in. So the next cycle, next slide, was to adapt. So they developed a simple algorithm that was posted right in front of the scheduling board, which is where the appointments are made. And they said that this would increase the reliability because there was no way that the scheduler could make an appointment without looking at this list. So the do was the schedulers asked all first appointments, have any of your babies been born early for 1 week? And what they found out was they did ask 100% of the time, but that about 1 in 5 times they asked, the caller did not understand the question and couldn't answer it. So again, they went back and said, well, this change actually was good because now our schedulers know to ask, but they have to ask the questions different. So let's re-clarify the terminology by what it means to have a baby early. So test 3, the next slide, they actually changed the question a little bit. And that was what they did in their planning phase. They were still collecting the same data. And they said, they asked, though, did any of your babies deliver early? And if they said yes, they then asked, did your baby go to the neonatal ICU? Because babies that are born premature much more commonly go to the neonatal ICU. And the study showed that they were, again, all the patients got asked the question, and 3 of them were identified as needing an expedited appointment so that they could get set up to undergo a more detailed history and, if appropriate, get progesterone. And they also found that some of the patients actually had received progesterone in their prior pregnancies. So they said, let's adopt this change. We think we have a process now. Let's standardize it and let's move on and use this going forward and just keep track of this data. Next slide. So this is a very nice example of a ramping or repeating change testing that shows how to get to a standardized process and get improvement. Next slide. So what's next? So the first thing is to make sure you're always thinking a couple of cycles ahead. So don't just do one test, but really think about what are you going to do to keep testing this and advance this and hopefully implement the change. You want to plan multiple cycles, as I said. You want to collect useful and only just enough data during the test that helps you to know if there's a change. Learn from failures and successes and communicate what you've learned. And this is a critical step here that we're at. Next slide. So in summary, change as an improvement depends on careful planning. Change as an improvement requires documentation of the aim, the measure, the change idea, and to do small tests of change and ramp them up till you get to the implementation phase and sustaining phase. Next slide. So the last thing I wanted to talk about is the way that OPQC has worked and many of the other collaboratives that we've worked on are that we're using interdisciplinary teams to work and support each other and supported by leadership to make positive change in healthcare. And we're often looking across systems because we learn better when we have lots of other people in lots of different locations doing things the same as what we're trying to with the same outcomes in mind. Networking works really well. And the OBQC collective that we have going, we have lots of opportunity to have QI support now, both for the novice and the expert. We have built nationally recognized faculty. We have great QI coordinators, and we participate in lots of evidence-based practices and projects. Next slide. So this is just a bigger picture looking at the breakthrough series, which is taking that PDSA cycle on the individual level and moving it to big system change like we are doing in OPQC, where we're working across the whole state to try to implement change. And it's really just putting all of the things we just talked about for the last 45 minutes into a bigger framework and really trying to make it all flow and work across multiple teams and multiple locations. And one of the critical things that we have are these LS sessions, which are learning sessions, where about every 6 months we can come together with all our teams and talk about what we've learned, what our challenges are, and what other ideas would be to advance our change. Next slide. So there's two options for asking questions or making comments. We have about 10 minutes left. One would be to write them in the chat box, and the other would be to come off of mute. And the way you do that is with *6 and ask questions. So we'll go from there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Markov, for that excellent presentation. If you have any small tests of change that any of you have done at your sites or your hospitals and would like to share, or you have questions regarding it, this is an excellent forum to ask it or share with others on the webinar.
Or if you feel kind of stuck and you're trying to do this but it hasn't been working well, we can often give you some ideas of things that you can try.
As Dr. Markov pointed out, you have two options. You can enter your question into the chat box, or you can raise your hand onto the right side panel and press *6 to come off of mute to ask the question. Jeff, do we have any questions?
No, we do have a couple. I'm sorry, please proceed.
Did we have a caller with a question? Please proceed.
Oh, yes. Sorry. My name is Anna from St. Elizabeth Health Center in Boardman. And I was just wondering what strategies that the doctor's hospital team used to engage the schedulers at the private physician offices. What steps did they take to achieve success with educating the schedulers on those appointment calls?
I can't speak specifically to that, but I think we can use the principles just to talk about them. I would say the key factor is to make sure that the administrative leadership or the physician leadership agrees to this test. So if you have their backing, then you can, set up an appointment to meet with the schedulers, talk about the plan, including them in the team is critical. Actually designing the test with them, because they'll know best what works for them and what doesn't. But a critical feature of that is making sure that whoever's in charge of the office, whether it's an administrator or the physician, really buys into this test and sees it as a way to improve their ability to find patients that need progesterone.
Thank you. understand.
Other questions or comments? We have a few more minutes. We would love to get some feedback about what you think is good about this seminar or what you think could be improved, just so that we can continue to do better. So if anybody has those comments, you can either type them in or speak them out. You don't even have to identify yourself if you don't want to.
Jeff, do we have any more questions?
Yeah, from Christy Williams. She asked if we can get a copy of this PowerPoint. It will be posted to the OPTC website at the end of the month following the next webinar.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, if you don't have any further questions, we thank you all for joining us for this excellent presentation on quality improvement by Dr. Mike Marcotte. And we look forward to hosting the next one on March 24th. It's also a Tuesday at noon. Thank you all once again for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you. 我告诉你，就是你要有任何困难，你只管说，你让我们跟你说。
Okay.
原来是，OK。那个是我哥哥，那个就是当时就是省里边一个领导，就是给王就给他了。嗯。主要的时候呢，有一个人跟这个人非常的客气。
嗯哼。
那个人呢，就签收了我哥哥。嗯哼。为什么呢？因为当时我哥盖这的时候，这个人买了。
买了股份以后呢，后来呢，这个人就移民加拿大，跑了，但是后来就给，后来就调查这个领导的事情，因为他们当时有一个人，他把股份卖给我哥了嘛，那个我哥以后呢，也本上呢就也就也就。
他们按照这个就是差不多，他有哥呢，他们那个设想，这个股份是领导的，那个人呢，在那个中介那边查了之后呢，就已经胡说八道了，因为知道年轻时候到了年纪以后不是好处的，怎么可能会出来，因为对于。 不是公司不好使，他就那个人在里边就胡说八道，胡说八道就说，你说这个钱和这个领导的司机开的车到了我们那个就是我们公司楼下，然后找钱把钱拿走了，就这样胡说八道的，所以我哥哥给就是带去了，带去以后呢，他就说这不知道。
家里人是不是搞退休？不过搞清楚怎么回事？
那你就跑回去了？
不是，反正当时没去。那我就一个猜想，肯定是跟搞错了。
那中介带人走为什么不告诉家里？
不告诉。你看到没有？
我看见了。
你别是哪衣服，是没有，就走了。走了那个，我们是大家是猜测，到了北京就是南京，到那个地方。
到那个这个待了80天以后，就是一个月里边，80天没有任何消息嘛。一个月里边，就是他们打电话，突然跑来跟我说，叫来到南京的医院，到南京省医院，医院，想去。 去了以后，然后呢，赶快打电话给我嫂子，我嫂子北京嘛，告诉嫂子，嫂子就家里以后呢，就说你马上签字。那我哥哥的女儿就说，我们马上转院，什么都不去，你不行，你马上签字，马上开刀，这开刀马上就没命了，说就等了几个小时，就是很紧急，因为他把那个事情以后呢，他打了针之前，就是说，他很紧张。
他们以后呢，当时是每天就在一口一米饭，有水，有水果，就是一直在那唱歌，唱歌，可能就是耽误了时间，就耽误了半个月，他们全管饭了，全是那个肺炎，把那个地方肿的都。
都是人，就像那个河里的老鼠那个泡的水一样，就是磕磕上面就是怎么一个包，然后那个就马上开开刀了嘛，然后以后呢，就发现那个里面有那个癌细胞，从肠胃里面来，然后呢，在经历过检查之后，就是很多地方呢都给那个都扩散了，叫什么腺癌晚期。
然后，我们肠子就是下面全部给接管了，就接管了，接到上面就是一点，然后一直暴露，暴露就是到北京去治疗嘛，去那个。
那这么长时间，八个月你说？
八十天。
OK。咱们那是这找他们单位是没找着的人，也没人说。
理论上不说为什么，什么都不说，就是问什么事，他们没有什么事情没有，他们什么就不说话，不说了，什么都不说，就这样。后来不是那个，后来呢，他那个，我不就是单方面老师就下去回去了吗？回去以后呢，那个咱们反正这里边你知道那种情况就是。非常那个残酷的，就是特别是那女的，对，那就不说了，因为说出来也是对国家就是一个影响，一个损害嘛。他是呢，就是说他不是他那个领导，因为那个领导呢，当时他是从事是。
你个人自己开私人公司。
我一部分说。那个领导呢，他刚开始在六安市当市长了，后来他就到了六安市当市长。他在六安市时候呢，就跟过来提商人。这些商人就是说，当时已经是很成功的商人了。他带的同事也从那什么其他地方也引进了不少商人，就在那个就六安市那个经济搞得非常火，还能火的，就是很就很成功了那个副省长。
OK。
当副省长，那个以后呢，他因为六安市一个那个什么根据地了，里边有很多老干部，在这里边工作的时候呢，因为大概房子拆迁啊什么的呀。就得罪了一些老干部，因为这里不像我说的怪他，因为他引进了其他人开发这个地方，开地里嘛，地里的话里面，大家房子问题什么问题呢？你要在那个打印利用很快那个线，所以这些老干部就没事干，就跑到那北京去搞吧，这个你就给那个地方就算了，因为他当时有一笔账，这个现在已经调查清楚了。就是说，不是像他们告诉你乱七八糟的。
对，你哥哥这几单，你调查清楚了。
都清楚了，那个领导也清楚了。我哥几张呢，他开始那个人就是胡乱说嘛，就说是那个，后来呢，这个事呢，就因为我哥进去以后，他们就调查自己账，我哥哥自己账去的时候确实没有，他不信，他说就可能骗他说有。那我哥现在真的害人，就在里面受了好大好大罪。然后最后呢，他是那个家人的事情，叫他我哥哥的儿子，叫他哥哥的女儿，叫他我哥哥的那个女婿，调查，我也调查了。但我调查他就是，我因为我不寄钱，我就给我哥寄，我哥没有给我寄。没有任何问题，就调到我妹妹，就调到我妹夫，给到很大很大的压力，结果我哥也乱七八糟说了，有什么事有就有吧，钱子，后来不是又病人嘛，就放出来了呢，他们就是因为这个调查的里面呢，因为你是不当，这个当呢不是他那个一个方子嘛。他大部分都是那个正账，但是还有些是小账，就像小金库一样，这小金库不能说，因为他那个是税务部门啊，什么部门啊，他的这个不健全的时候，商业的那个银资金的运转的话，他会有小账在里面去，就是把我哥的小账是大账，调查过以后是先调查，因为他的任务出来，从小账调查。小账呢，查出来是有东西，他们就查，查了以后呢，就查就是从里边，说有四个问题，这四个问题我等下再告诉你，我再告诉你我哥的公司，我哥公司呢，他是那个1997年的时候公司已经倒闭了，就四个人在，那个工人呢，不是工人，他一共是50个，公司有50个人，很小公司。像原来叫五特许工人公司，那时候已经是那个人大部分人都是啥那个生活费， 经回家了，就是已经差不多就是已经有四个礼拜回家了。那时候呢，他们那头都跑了，就找了一个新的工作，头都跑了。他说我哥呢就顶替上去，就把这个工作接手以后呢，就很快，因为我哥他就是我们家我爸爸，我们家的家长是搞商业的。我爸爸也是搞经商，因为就是虽然又说是在社会主义情况下的，但是经商的道理是明白的。我哥就很快就把这个经商一部分就是搞起来了。搞起来了以后呢，就是在这个98年的时候，就跟一个叫工商集团联营，联营的时候呢，就是这里面就出问题了。为什么呢？他们设了想法。联营的时候呢。当时的条件就是会计出纳都是我们的，中心医疗全都是他们的，就我哥的单位人是属于外围，就是没有任何那个权利的。但当这样的运行了9年以后呢，就是情况运行的挺好的，都盈利了嘛。这时候呢就开始改，就是在2003年的时候，2003年的时候，就是他们工资是给了4次嘛，让市政委就动员我哥去改革。那我哥他们就说，那就后来动员前3年动员的时候，我哥还不想干。后来呢，就是03年的时候动员的时候，再动员他就同意了。同意了呢，就是到了03年是2月份还是1月份就开始改革。改革之后呢，这时候呢就是。价呀什么都顾好了好，我现在跟你说到这里，这两
个都在上市了。
不是，
没上市，
他们家是很小单位。那这里边呢，就是有4笔账有问题。有一笔账什么呢？就是说这公司从改制那天到那个改制成功那天，总共呢10个月。这10个月呢，因为那个市政府因为当时刚改制嘛，就一些政策不明确啊，他就从那个就从改制那天，改制头一天算起。改制那个头天算好以后，那时候就是省里啊、市里啊、财政局啊什么东西，就来帮你们这个地方选股价以后呢，那你就买呗。但从开始到结束，经过了10个月的时间。这个10个月呢，他们自身有产生盈利。产生盈利呢，我跟他们也不知道，就把这个盈利呢，就是打入了，就是那个再生产了。他也不知道。他们就是从这笔账，他就说，那这笔账是你们吞了国家的财产。他们也就说，那我们的国家有一个文件说，从改制前到改制后中间的财政效益归国家。那我哥就当时就说，那我们没有接到这方面文件。他说，其实有这文件的话，你没有给我，我也不知道怎么执行。所以我不知道，我已经搞好了，就是那个嘛。就这一张，他们就起诉是吧？那是四笔。第二笔账呢，就是。是那个，因为他们公司。
你先说，你现在想让我给你帮什么忙？
对。
我看我能不能行，否则的话都是。
我把你讲完以后，就是一共有4笔账，我讲完第一笔账了。第二笔账呢，就是说，说他们买地，买地是政府本来是1000块钱一个平方米，但是因为他是新单位同时呢，就是股价。那个人因为作为一种鼓励，因为他本来说这个单位是已经是不资产，但是我政府买的时候你买了500万，就是他觉得政府创造很大的效益，那么政府就作为一种鼓励，就给他投资，给他一个奖励，你买些什么钱，当时用500多，就给了10%的 discount。第一方面呢，但他们因为他们有小账嘛，当时呢股价的时候，他把从大账里面拿出这些钱。然后呢，当我给的时候呢，就少了那些钱，但这个钱在小账上，我可不知道，因此这是别人掌管的，这是一共还有另外还一共有4笔账，就是每一张。
你哥那是整个是公司的头。
他是那个董事长。
嗯哼。
对，但那个 现在问题就是说呢，就这几个账呢，他们查出来了，查出来，但是我哥第一他没有参加任何分红，他工资实际上年薪40万块钱，比别人都很少，但是呢，现在问题他就说这笔账是我哥的贪污，作为贪污犯，就是要去把他就是起诉他，起诉他，那个现在我哥就申诉，申诉呢，现在问题是就是到了的中叫低级。处级人民法院没判，没判就是为什么呢？因为这些那个这个罪状呢不清楚，你说是罪，但也不是罪，所以就是那个中低级处级人民法院呢，就把这个案子就送到那个中级人民法院，中级法院也觉得这个问题没法搞，
现在更坏了。
现在没有，就很小很小的案子，你知道吧？一般这种情况下在，
到不了高法，
不可能到高法。
高法在深山大学那上高法。
大案子上高法，对他这个案子呢，就是彻底是这里来，在低级人民法院不能判，为什么不能判呢？因为这不清楚，因为他不是个人贪污，你不能定个人贪污罪，对，所以他就把他送到中级人民法院，中级法院又不能判，说你这不清楚。不能
那我们这个接着调查呀，
接着调查很清楚啊，这个就是这笔账，每东西都清楚，但是你这个那个，我哥就觉得我在这改制中，里面有当时的情况，当时的原因，当时的环境，同时呢，我也是就是这些东西不是我掌握的，我应该承担那个就是责任，这个你说我有罪。那我应该就承担责任，我不推辞，但是你说这是个人贪污，我一分钱没拿，你怎么能说我是个人贪污呢？还有呢，他们算的账和这个真正的账差别太大。那这是另外一个，就是要求重新那都无所谓了，就是说，但是你这个就是现在这个案子推到高院去了，
最高法院了。
这就是说，我就不知道你朋友他能不能去有什么。
我不知道，一般那你把这个名字或什么你给我，案子的号，我只能给你试着问一下。
对，案子号，他是在什么，他有很多部门，他是在一个什么部门？
我都不知道。以前呢在刑事厅。
对，
但是他都在刑事厅当副厅长，后来呢就是说相当于是到二线了，就超过55岁了嘛。就到二线了以后，他就到了一个什么地方，我就不知道了。但现在没有以前忙，我只知道这个。
但他看不到，就是说对他来说方便不方便？
我只能给你试试问，因为这个人我跟你说过，他自己本身是高干子女，就他们都是挺有架子的那种人。像我跟他吧，没有任何求什么事儿，所以跟我是特好的朋友。有时候比如说，一跟他可能会一句话就给我怼过来，就说假设他有可能就说你管那么多干嘛？甭管，有时候可能会这样，就是他们就属于那种，不是像那种，你明白说吗？就是那种高干子弟，他们有他们自己的一股子那种劲儿。就是说好的时候呢，就跟你很好。像上次不是我舅舅也是认识的，也是我舅妈的一个什么朋友要管，他就没管嘛。对，他是河北省的，而且河北省的那个法院的院长是他以前的哥们儿。就因为我舅舅也不怎么知道了这事儿，因为我舅舅跟他很熟。跟我这朋友很熟，所以拿他当那个，就相当于像当个外甥一样，到人哪都说我有一个外甥在什么高法，就说的就是他，就外甥女儿，就那么意思，就说当着跟我是因为我们特别好嘛，就这种，但是他就没管，就当时是那个河北省的法院的事，而且也是等于是我舅舅认识这个朋友是受害方，他就希望呢公正的判决。不是因为别的，就觉得要不然他就退捐，就是冤案，就是说也不是怎么回事，然后就是说反正是后来我就跟我舅舅说，我说你甭找我，你去找他，看他怎么跟你说，就找我们那个朋友，后来呢他就舅舅就回了，他就也是没管没事，所以我是不知道，但是比如说你是已经到了高法了的话呢，就是让那些帮你查一查或者怎么着，就是怎么回事，就你比如有个案子的号，就是怎么样才能够找到这个 case， 你明白我说的吧？然后你找出来这些东西呢，让他去过问一下，看看会是个什么情况。
不知道他，我跟那里说一个事情，他的问题是说呢，就是说因为那个是针对插手，所以我们都是不敢去，就是说知道他愿意，但是都不敢有所作为。
嗯，
所以一般像这种情况下不会找高院的高法的。
这只要到了高法，
嗯，
就是想看看他能不能有什么办法去看一下，或者是怎么着。所以他们这人就是说，怎么说呢？说话都特别那个，
他们都是
特别严谨，对，比如说打电话直接问他什么时候，你跟他这个电话里说，我是都有监听的。
嗯，
他直接就跟我说。
嗯，因为我现在就说。哥哥妹妹，我哥的女儿在北京。如果他在电话是不方便的话，我哥哥的女儿可以把这里边详细情况，就跟他，就是这样子。我说，
就是你如果能知道那个 case 的 number 或什么，我可以给他微信过去，叫他去看能不能先是第一步，他能不能找到这个案子，然后看是不是就是说是个什么样的情况，他能怎么帮，这都很难说，知道吧？
这个，
但我知道他当时在的那个厅，就是完全是核准死刑的，那是什么厅？就好像就是刑事厅。当时他就是所有的审查大权最后到了他的决定，就是说需要重审，还是需要判刑，或者是就无罪，就不是说无罪，就是不给死刑或者什么，他是管这事儿的以前。所以现在他换了一个地方，我就不知道，就相当于有点像退到二级，有点像养老的那种感觉似的，要到60岁才能最后退休，也快了嘛，这边也就快了嘛。好吧，你给我你的那个特级 number， 就这个，你明白吗？就是说，比如说他在高法上怎么能查到你？因为他们的案子太多了，多得不得了。所以说，你只要能够找到这个东西，第一步先得找到他。我说的那我舅舅舅妈的那朋友是一个什么？就是说是双方打官司的什么事儿，就是他站的这方面是冤的那边，他就怕了那边有人，就是说好像就是一边倒，他这边不就吃亏了吗？他就说只要我不要求别人，我只要要求的公正判，他说那我这边就可以就 OK， 如果你不公正的判我就不干，但是他说那边可能是有路的，要不怎么的，是这种，
就怕就得不到公正。
但我觉得你平时跟中纪委的关系的话，那是不是会稍对的好一点？
他是
没有一个，不是说，比如说两个人打官司。
其实这里边最后呢，已经不牵涉到任何中纪委了。
嗯。
但是就是说，因为说我哥就是他性格比较硬。
嗯。
因为他进去的时候呢，那个他。
建哥怎么样？身体怎么样？
他现在是做
了手术，
晚期那个扩散。
嗯哼。
现在呢，1年多了。原来按道理说是说这个经过那个化疗以后，他那个就是癌细胞因子的话应该在5以下，他现在已经达到48，就是前两个月是48了，就是没几个月就不停打包，不停打包，就是说你这个因为他已经是晚期了，晚期了现在已经到在08那个上面，就是都有了。所以就是反正就是不是非常乐观吧，人也很瘦。
现在是在家。
现在呢，就说他可能马上要去北京了，要去再去复查。现在是他是在家，他在家就是属于叫什么
监外，
保外监
狱。保外监狱 ，OK。
但他是没有判的。
嗯
哼，然后呢，你现在就是觉得你挂在这里，挂在这里，因为我哥不服，就说呢，这个事情不是我个人的，他把它定为个人的贪污，要定为个人贪污，还有这里边东西，他没有拿一分钱的，他连分红都没拿，他把所有的分红钱，因为这么个企业刚刚一开始的时候，企业非常困难。没有钱贷款嘛，你不给你贷款嘛，所以他把那个分红的钱全部打入了那个再生产里面去了。所以就是说他那个那里他们提出那几笔事，
他现在弄到高法之后是要干嘛呢？
他是这不是他地方和省都不能判决。
嗯。
就是往上通，通得了，都觉得这个是不。
他现在假设到了高法，他能怎么办呢？
那现在就不知道了，就怕能够这个高法对有点有时候这些小案子，他可能那个规定他能够不能够去调查，不 不知道一看这个东西啊，那就该按照他们的顺来那个计划多少公分的那个，因为在里边呢，
那就是等于你在中级法院的时候，你各地应该是就是申诉或者把那些理由都写在里面了，
写在里
面都很清楚了，
都清楚，对，就是复地上。那基本上有一笔账是叫什么呢？就是说，比如说现在不是那个单位不是卖卡吗？
嗯。
这个卡，比如说我买了100块钱，这卡如果你打到一分账，那么你就马上就要交23%的税。
嗯。
但是我这个没有实行那个商业交换，所以这里边的税应该是和那个税不一样，所以这个钱呢打在小卡上面，打在小卡上面。还有呢，比如说那个人家商场。那个进商场的，就是那个供应商进商场要给押金，这个押金也放在那边，这也是一笔账。这笔账呢，他们都说哦，你这笔账应该交税，但是这笔账没经过商业的交换，他不能交税，我还退回去的，有些都要退回去的。这是那个就是税务部门，它有一个。
那比如你像这个东西跟说明，那对呀、啊，说明了以后，那他就认为，那他这就不是他的没有问题了，那就。
他是这样，就说实在那个现在案子多，下面多少人给查，他查案子呢不行，不是一笔的，所以他这个你怎么说哦？你这个从你改税前到改税后这个之间，那、你差了什么100多万？这100多万你是贪污了，但是呢，实际上呢，这个100多万。就是说我们不知道怎么去处理，你能告诉我怎么处理？你不应该把这笔钱你当做我的就是贪污罪来那个，所以在四笔账每一笔账他都在申诉，就说不知道人家能不能去听你的申诉，有时候得不到
不听你的还得接着申诉，
那
就这样
了，你这么说了。更关键你那个他一下来就是板上钉钉的话，你没办法申诉。
不会吧？要是还是冤案的，还不管了。
那你已经，他已经给你定案了，已经到高级人民法院给你定案了。
高法就是说，他最后在他就结案之前，他也得调查的呀。我是知道，我这个朋友经常是到处去出差，就是为了去，比如说去新疆啊，去哪的，都是去调查的。
他们
应该是
案那么多，他们还那么多精力，就是小案子，说实在，对任何人来说，就是一个非常非常小的开始。不是他的钱，又没有，因为那个，你说，他说你这些钱他都该赔的全赔了，就是说按照罚款都全给全交过了，就是说在经济上面，就是说，他有
干净的，
全是干净净的，个人是干干净净的，单位的钱也是干干净净的了，没什么。
那现在比如说最差，他能给我判成什么？
现在你就说呢，如果是按照，
因为你都就是说。就像是现在，比如说有的人就是贪污了也好怎么样，他只要能把那个赃款全都退干净，不又是一个执行的办法吗？
现在不知道，因为什么呢？第一，这个事情是我哥自己把小账公布出来的，他自己说的是一个坦白。就是自己不是你逼我说的，而是我自己说的，这应该说是那个从宽情节，这第一点。第二点呢，他是积极主动配合，把所有的你说就是说，虽然那边不管是谁的错，是我们是政府的错，你或者你什么错，我把所有的钱全部赔款了，就是该赔的、该罚的我全部罚过了。这经济上面呢，就是说已经是。
你这个案子首先先告，这叫什么叫经济案？算经济案。
对。
经济案，然后你再给我一个那个 case number，
这个案子
只能是给你试一下。
这个案子跟那个政治上一点关系没有。跟那个中纪委人，因为那个就是那个中纪委本身自己也有问题，就是原来查我哥那个人呢，他现在也是自己给自己查了。他是在山东的，他因为这个那个人确实是我在那个南京时候看的，他在山西的案上面，他自己也贪污，所以他现在被查了，现在
被查了，
对，因为他被查了，所以我哥呢轻松了，要不然的话，他判我哥判的，他因为我哥前段时间我拍桌子骂他，就说那还是太胆大了，你也敢骂他们。无法无天，我们就是无法无天，我们就是法，我们就是天，跟我哥对骂，我哥是先说的，
嗯，
所以就
说的吧，比如说，问清楚这个案子，假设他报上去以后算是个什么案，
对，
就这样呢，就是你至少你大头那么多的案子，他至少得知道上哪去找的，
对，
明白我说的吧？就是说，要让他比较容易的就能找到这个案例，然后呢，就看，比如说是他可以做这点事，至少，比如说假设是这个张三这个人来管这案例，至少可以跟他说一声，你帮我好好看看这案子或怎么样，我就觉得可能最多，如果不是经过他自己手呢，最多可能能帮到这样的程度，就是说看看他怎么能行。
不要在他那个家里。
不会，这人这种高干子女，人家哪把我当回事儿？
但是
我
们来
说
是大事。
我知道，我是不是不是说对他来小事？我说他不会把我看得那么重。
对，
你明白我说的吗？对，就是说就是好朋友，但是呢，就是不牵扯任何这种事情。所以那时候我舅舅跟我说，我就跟我舅舅说，我说李艳明老是在那照顾我妈，我说你也是知道的，对不对？我说你就别给他找任何麻烦。我就跟我舅舅说，我说你管不了的事情，你就告诉人家你不能管，你不要再去，就是再去揽事情。然后就说，哦，知道了，以后不管了，就这样子。因为他，我舅舅是个热心人，就有时候别人说什么，啊，我认识高法的，吹牛呗，感觉就是有点那样子，你知道吧？
我
但是说他没有，我就说我不可能给他，也给不到他压力。你明白我说的吗？就他们这些人都是很自以为是的。那些高干子女从小就是那种，
心肠都变
冷静
了，看
太
多了，更不在乎了。
而且就是他们本身就是属于那种，就是优越感很强的那种人，叫做从小就在年年的国庆是在天门城楼上过来，那跟咱们都没法比呢，就是跟着他爸爸年年都上天门城楼了，就是因为他家最小，比较宝贝一点嘛，就是那种，所以他们家不说要没有荣华大命，可能都成不了才嘛。发大病了以后，就是说一下子就是再跟我们一块儿去当工人去了嘛，对吧？然后慢慢，对，而且高考都自己考上的，对，还都是还是挺棒的，都是这种。
但是对我们来说，我们没办法了，只能说
你
哪怕万一别的地方，我都尽百分之百努力。
我明白。但是你明白我现在说的，就是你给我一个清清楚楚的一个东西，这样我可以给他 email 过去，我不用通过我们的群网，跟他自己也有联系，就是我自己给他弄过去以后，看看他怎么给我回。好吗？
这个对，这个就不要告诉别人了。
不告。
这个人他以前，因为我就从来任何人都没说过。
嗯哼。
因为这个人也是中国人圈的信息，
对
不对？所以说这就说
了。
对，说。
没问题。没问题。好吧，就给我找出来一个详细的东西，然后给他微信过去，看他怎么回。您到时候了，就是说，就是让他能够比较容易的找到这个东西去。
这个是那个什么，我可肯定是不写。
哦，不要，
不管什么
都。那个都不会。我跟你说嘛，他那个生涯大权，一个一个一条递上去，他绝对不收的。这个人是个清官，绝对是清官，绝对是好官。
那我以后他到美国来，太幸福了。
他就是这样。
不，你千万不能看我，这是两回事了。
不是，我
非常感谢。
对，这都是那什么，像我们这些哥们，我这几个哥们，不跟你说吗？还有一个是肯定是公安局的哥们，但人家到现在，像一般人骑自行车都逆行，他都宁可绕圈儿，他都绝对要多骑一点的话，他都不逆行。都是这种，对，就是我的朋友，就是我们这一代的人的这些朋友都是这样的，除了那薄熙来的太太在后来的变，就是其实我们都是这种，就是说都是就家里面像这些人，他们都是高干子女们，这都是受很正统的教育，我们都在一起的时候真的都是好哥们，都是那种，就是说像我包括我姐姐也是这种人，就是那种一是一二是二都是那种，是不会是都不是那种，所以你根本不用考虑。这个女的就因为她单身，他比较有钱，因为家里头也不需要他的钱，对不对？就是单身比较有钱，所以他就喜欢，就像我不说吗？像我的那个东西都是他们给的吗？就都是他给的，因为他一个人单身，他没有孩子，没有负担，就一个人挣的钱自己花还是挺多的。所以他是我们那儿的富婆，我们嘛叫他。像我们要一块回去，我回去请客全是他请。就好像就是他说凭什么就每次都是我要请的，所以他没有负担，他每次都就说来说去就把都变成他请。这个时候也开玩笑就说，这几大的这些，我们有个朋友在石油部，居然也很富的，因为石油部不是那个特别有钱吗？ 就也挺负责。后来他才明白，就他们不比我少，干嘛老让我请客？
看你
就成那习惯了，一块出去吃饭，使劲点，点完了再大道歉，习惯了。没问题，好吗？你就给我弄清楚，然后我就那个给你去试一下。而且他这些人，他帮忙也好，什么也好，他绝对不是为了要什么好处，你放心。
你要能看着你希勒德，我们的人，这个后半生，我们的人努力去回报的。
真的都是这种，都是这种很那什么的人，根本就不需要其他的，就看他能不能帮得上忙而已。而且就说这个东西，比如说是个什么情况，有的时候也可能咱们认认真真的跟他说写，就他根本就不愿意管，都有可能的。
很多很多挺狠的那种，不知道他有没有机会。
我不知道，对，谁我都
不
知道。对，
或者他认识。
上次那个是河北的那个人是，因为我都知道那个人，真的是特铁的哥们，他俩就差点就成了一对，后来没成了。但所以我就知道那个人是对他很那什么。后来，但是他说他对那人也特有看法。后来就说，最后那人当了官以后，他是，就我们这个朋友就说他是不喜欢当官，就差不离就得了。像那个人就属于那男的嘛，就比较特别实，一个劲往上爬，老瞧不上他这个那个的。后来他就说，我说也可能呢，他要跟你结婚，也可能就不一样，就说不一样的这种。有时候一看你病，对，就我觉得我也可能特贱，是不是还跟我的那个说了？
就说男人
说
在外面打拼，那需要做当官嘛？
对，所以就他就说不一样。那人最后把我转到高法，河北从高法走的，到了河北省。像他们这种就是要到底下去，肯定就是某一个法院的院长，
就是官
长，对，
放不下来就是。
对，那时候不太上上进，不老想回去到湖北。湖北是他姐姐，原来是湖北法院的院长。姐夫是检察院的院长，这都是那挺厉害的。然后那个上面相当于张下的官，他当时就说了：“你甭沾我们家光，他说这种官你沾不上。”
不用沾，我不犯罪。
不是说犯罪不犯罪。你有的时候他们说好像做那种什么事情，要想把这个事业做起来，你没有这些人的关系做不起来。所以上面要惦记人家，那他们俩还挺熟的。像那个夏军自己回国时候能上他们家去聊天去，什么什么之类的，就都挺熟的跟他们。我说夏军跟我的朋友都挺好的，我的朋友也多，夏军好像没那么多朋友，或者他的朋友都出国了，就有好多那种情况。我是这一波人主义和就我自己出来了，他们都没走，都在国内呢，不一样。
他要如果是那个需要的话，我哥的女儿可以找他。
对，到时候再说，看他是个什么情况，我可以告诉他，我再问他在北京，知道详细的情况，看他怎么回。
我哥哥女儿，他可能以后也要离开北京了。
他在北京什么单位？
他在那招商银行。
招商银行就是咱就是学这类的是吧？
他学会计的，他现在已经到什么了，所以他到对走了，就因为。跟他的钱是吧？那就是现在就给他辞职了。他原来在工商银行，工商银行那辞职了，那个。
行，你就把那个东西弄清楚了，告诉我，我给你试试。
好的，
没事，不用谢。
这东西咱都不知道能不能够走到哪一步。观众哪一个有点希望，对我们来说意义很大。
好的。